As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network. This is Nerder, She Wrote with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday and I am Dave Dufour, and of course that means it's Nerder. She Wrote. Joining me as always, my good buddies Mo DeKeel and Seth Partnow. What's up, guys?
Not a whole lot, Dave. It's literally the dog days of summer.
It's the dog days, but we've actually finally have stuff that's happened. Some interesting, some bad, some I'm ambivalent about in either direction. But we can jump right in if you guys want. I guess let's start with the bad. And this sucks. Chet Holmgren, of course, got hurt. We got the news today from Shams Charania that it's a Liz Frank injury. He's going to have surgery. This is it's bad news, right? Like, this sucks. He's going to miss his whole rookie year. And it was a freak play. He was playing in the Pro-Am. He was actually guarding LeBron in transition. He just stepped weird and suffered the injury. So everyone, please hold off on your, this is why GMs didn't want to draft this guy take. This is, you know, feet are fragile, actually. So missing a year, we already thought OKC was going to be bad. This means they're going to be worse. You guys got any takes here on Chet missing a season?
I sort of made jokes about, I think I said wobble for Wemby, and I think it was Phil Barnett on Twitter came back with Winband for Wemban. And I think that's I think that's right. I think, you know, on one hand you're sad because you want this guy to be on the court and you want them to do well. On the other hand, like, this is the presumptive number one pick last year looks like a generational talent, and, you know, can't be like upping your chances of that isn't the worst thing, especially if you're in like max rebuild mode.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's just like, I was disappointed because the Thunder were going to be fun this year. Right. Like, this was going to be a fun Thunder team, and whatever, we can argue whether they should tank or not again or whatnot. I don't think they should. I think they should have started now that they had Chet, assuming healthy, would have been a good time to, you know, actually probably try to win games. But now they're in a different scenario with this. And I mean, it just sucks. It's hard to say much else in that sense. But I think the important thing here is we're going to see a whole backlash now to the Pro-Am games. And I think that's going to be kind of stupid in the sense of, like, these dudes can get hurt anywhere, you know, not just in Pro-Am games. They go, you know, this was always a concern when guys would go play for their national team. Literally, as we're talking, Giannis and Jokic are going at each other in I think somewhere in Serbia.
They're in Belgrade. Yeah.
And they're in Belgrade right now. We know Luka's playing in that tournament. Like, there's there's always a risk to it. There's also a risk when these guys are playing in the practice runs. There's always a risk with all of this stuff. It's just, this is an unfortunate scenario. I just don't want to see people start
throwing a backlash now at the crossover or the Drew League or anything like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of folks that have brought up the love of the game clause. And the truth is, man, all right, yes, that's part of it. That's what allows them to play in the national team games and the pickup runs and stuff like that. But basketball players play basketball. It's how you get better at basketball. And occasionally you get hurt. If this had happened in training camp, it's the exact same conversation from an injury perspective, from what happened. Oh, okay. Hey, he was guarding in transition, stepped weird, got injured. The pro-am is just the place. Now we could say, hey, it was a wet floor or whatever. I don't think the floor being wet had anything to do with that.
Also, that could happen anywhere too. My first practice at the facility after I got hired by the Bucks, like they're doing a movement, like a side to side shooting drill, and Chris Middleton finds a wet spot. His foot slips out. He does the splits and tears his hamstring and is out for the half the season. And it's, you know, that was in the most controlled environment possible.
Injuries happen, guys. It's just at the end of the day, it's just bad luck in that sense. And I think that's something that, you know, it's nobody wants to hear it or really kind of talk about it, but it's just it's shitty.
What?
There's not much else we can really dive into in terms of, I think, reading too much into it as a team.
Well, people go in the full bust route, bringing up Greg Oden. It's like, all right, man, you're doing a little bit too much.
Greg Oden was very good when he played. So, like, that's, you know.
Yes. I know, man. Listen, it's plenty of guys in recent memory have gotten hurt prior to their rookie year and missed the whole season. Blake Griffin missed his whole rookie year. Joel Embiid. You know, this is two MVP candidates. I just think, like, going straight from – oh, well, we're worried this guy might be injury prone because he's skinny to, oh, see, look, he hurt his foot. I mean, I don't know, man. If it had been an ankle sprain, would we be saying the same thing? I don't think so. As far as for Chet and his career goes, missing a season, I don't think it's the worst thing. I mean, you know, he's still going to be around the team. He's going to be in the weight room, Mo. And, you know, for a guy whose body was such a large topic of conversation or small topic of conversation. You know, this is
really bad.
There could be, I know. Dave, there could be a little bit of a hidden benefit here, is what I'm getting at from a body perspective.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's always that, right? Getting acclimated through the, okay, this is what NBA life is kind of like a little bit, you know, being on the planes and around that stuff and things like that. So there's always that sort of deal with it where, you know, it's going to be different once he starts playing anyways, but he almost gets a gap year and try to like an introduction into it a little bit, watching it from afar as he goes through things. But like, I just don't know if he even has the frame to really put on a ton of weight. Like, I just don't know if that's going to be a real big thing. The scary thing is if he gets fat, which I don't think is going to happen. Yeah,
but I don't think he's got the frame for getting fatty.
He's got a foot injury, and next thing you know, he's like, whoa, looks like, hey, Kool-Aid, man.
No, the one issue is like, yeah, he needs to add strength, but it's you do foot injury. Do you want to add? Right.
I actually don't think he's going to bulk up. I think that it's more of a Kevin Durant situation where it's
even Brandon Ingram
and Chet is. Right. And Chet is fairly wiry as far as his strength goes. Like, you can see his strength. It's just that he gets moved off of his spot because, you know, he's light in the ass. And that's just how it's going to be. And this is where you learn how to use your body a little bit. You develop some more strength, get, you know, some more strength in your hips. But I don't think he's ever going to be, he's not going to be Joel Embiid size. It's just not going to be a thing for him. But Kevin Durant got stronger in the league.
But you know, but you know what the problem is every time people bring up the Kevin Durant, Brandon Ingram size, they play two different positions. This is a dude that's going to be expected to be in the paint from time to time and banging with guys. He's going to have to guard a Joel Embiid, a Nikola Jokic and stuff. And yeah, they're few and far between, but he's going to have to be able to bang with that. Like, at some point, he's going to have to put on some weight. He's never going to be huge. He's never going to be the Hulk or anything like that or anything massive. But like, he does have to at some point put on weight. Like you said, he's light in the ass, so he doesn't get pushed off positions and things like that. I was watching it in summer league where like he would roll down the rim and somebody would bump him and there goes the lob attempt. And I think there's those things there. So it's a little bit different. So like when people say like KD's a wing, KD came in the league as a wing And, you know, Brandon Ingram, wing. Like, those guys can get away with being massively skinny, I think, versus a guy that's going to play the 4-5 position. Even though its position has changed over time, you still got to get in there and bang. You still got to get in there and rebound and things like that. There's going to be a lot more expected also, from KD, him in terms of banking than those guys.
One of the issues is sort of the hips and Katie's just a better mover. Like, one of my sort of worries about Chet coming in was how much of a two-footed jumper he is. And, you know, and to get mm-hmm. that sort of more, you know, single foot balance, you would need to get more kind of strength in that area. So that, so not getting the full year in a, you know, probably a limited year in that kind of program, because it's going to be much more sort of rehab focused, I would think, than true mobility work. I think that there's a loss there.
I mean, there's definitely a loss. I mean, the guy's going to be out the entire year. It, just in the terms of what you're talking about, just moving your body and that stuff, there's definitely a massive loss. And going through that rehab, like, this isn't, let's put it to you this way. It's in August and they're like, yo, he's not going to be out. He's going to be out till next August. That's a long time before he's doing stuff on the court again. And I think that's something you got to look at in terms of a loss for them.
Yeah, I mean, with this sort of injury, football players go through it a little bit more often than basketball guys do. But it's a 4 to 6 months recovery table, and then he's going to, you know, rehab/prehab, I'm assuming, before next season. So, you know, misses the year, but the silver lining is this is not something that should hamper him long term. I mean, this is where having that more slender frame probably is a good thing, right? Like, this is something he should recover from, is, you know, what my gathering is of reading about the Liz Frank injury a little bit more extensively this morning. So that's good news.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Other good news. I think this is a good thing, guys, because we want the Lakers to be good, because we're going to have to talk about them no matter what. So I'd rather they have a better team, right? LeBron James and Anthony Davis are on the team. We're going to talk about the Lakers, and they made a trade. Thank goodness for the late August trade. They got Pat Beverly in exchange for Talen Horton Tucker and Stanley Johnson. Now, it begs some interesting questions, guys. Does this mean Russell Westbrook is coming off the bench? Or is he being moved? It's a fascinating chemistry play if they're not moving Russell Westbrook. I'm not exactly sure what to make of that, but they got better because Patrick Beverly is a much better player than the two guys they traded out.
They got better because they got a basketball player. Like, let's just be honest. Like, when you look at the team that they have, like, there's bereft of talent. I hope I used that word correctly. Hopefully I did. But, you know, when you look at what the, Jovan Buha of The Athletic wrote a piece and gave up the starting five, you know, they're closing five. And it was LeBron, AD, Austin Reeves, Taylor Horton Tucker. And I have no idea who else.
I think it was Troy Brown Jr.
Troy Brown Jr. It was like, but literally just Damian Jones. Like, it's literally just going like, okay, who? And this is going to be the closing. This is going to be your closing. This is the most important thing, not about starting, but who closes games. These are the guys that make a difference. So obviously they get better because, you know, Patrick Beverly jumps in there. How much better they got? I still just look at them going like, okay, cool. Enjoy the play-in tournament. Like, I don't see you being that much better to the point where I feel like you jumped. The questions of Westbrook is really where it gets interesting.
Seth, like, could they play them together? No. That won't happen, right?
I mean this is the ultimate test. I think we're gonna talk at some point about how you deal with, like, healing interpersonal stuff. Feels like the bridge is too low for there to be the water to go under it between these two players going back 8 years. I mean,
yeah, a long time.
Well, when was the meniscus incident?
I think that was either when they knocked knees. The 13 or 14 playoffs.
Yeah. That's a pretty significant thing to try to get over, in my opinion. You know, if Russ felt like he was intentionally injured, I just don't know that you would ever get over it. And these guys have had beef forever. So that being said, I guess that Russ is not going to be there, right?
I've always thought Russ was never going to be there at the start of the season. But one thing I want to say, even if he is there, you can theoretically play them together, because at least Beverly has gotten better as a three-point shooter, as a spot-up guy. So at least it's not to the point where they're both non-shooters and things like that. I just don't think you could play Russ. That's a whole other issue in general. But but you can theoretically play those two together if Russ is still there. The question is, you know, what do you do about Russ? How do you move off of him? We know there's that talk. You know, the deal has been dead for a while, but Indiana with Buddy Hield and Miles Turner for Russ and draft picks and things like that. I'll be honest with you guys, though, I was surprised this trade happened, only because I thought the Lakers were going to jump in as a third team in the Donovan Mitchell trade. And I was hoping they were going to get Beverly and Bogdanovich, right? Like, I was hoping they were going to find a way. Then I'm like, okay, now that's a little bit more of an interesting team in that scenario. Now I'm kind of looking at it going like, all right, well, where's the next move coming? But wherever we look, it's going to be Russ. Well,
the Hield and Turner option, right? Like, adding those guys to the lineup. I mean, Hield makes sense as a shooter, but man, you have no wing defense whatsoever in that scenario.
Lonnie Walker, what are you doing? Why are you trashing Lonnie Walker?
I mean,
spent $6 million on Lonnie Walker. What are you doing?
I thought that was for shooting. I really thought that was for shooting. The Lonnie Walker deal, even though he's like a 30% 3-point shooter, but I like Hield makes sense as an offensive piece. You know, Miles Turner, I think he's a fantastic rim protector. And with LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Miles Turner, that's a ton of rim protection. But who's guarding on the wing if you make that deal? I mean, listen, losing Stanley Johnson is a little bit of a bigger deal in this trade than it ought to be for a team that has,
the fact that you say, man, they're going to miss Stanley Johnson. I think that, yeah.
That says everything. That's if it was Stanley Johnson, it was the that's who's guarding the wing. That's your hope. It's all right, y'all. You can start planning.
Can we flip this around? I want to talk about the Utah side of this trade.
That's where I was heading. Let's do it.
You know, when it first came out, I was like, okay, what picks? And then there were no picks. And then I'm still thinking about it. And I'm like, would it have been cool if they'd have gotten a pick? Sure, but I don't actually hate it for them. Like, Beverly's in an expiring. They're, I think, fairly clearly turning the page. Yep. Horton Tucker has talent. It's not like it would be unprecedented for a young player to leave a LeBron team and flourish. So I don't hate it. Horton Tucker's maybe his contract isn't great, but Utah kind of doesn't care. Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Like,
they're trying to be bad on purpose.
2 years of Talen Horton Tucker now, would you rather have like a 2029 first or that?
Yeah, I actually would rather have Talen Horton Tucker, to be honest with you. I think that what we saw from him early on, we didn't see, you know, last season. Right? And that was the thing. He looked so bad, especially in comparison to Alex Caruso, who they gave up essentially to keep Talen Horton Tucker. But he's still a pretty good – he's an okay player, and he needs the ball in his hands, I think, to be a little bit more effective on offense. Let's see if he can grow his game some. But he's young, man. I'm with you, Seth. I don't hate it.
It's definitely worth the flyer for Utah, even if they're not getting picks out of it. It's just, you know, hey, we're going to be bad. We want to suck for a while. I'm talking about Wembanyama because everybody's going to keep kind of tanking for him. You know, and – they got off, you know, Patrick Beverly did not want to be there if they were going to tank. He was kind of already sort of whispering that stuff, you know, things on Twitter and things like that. So, you know, you kind of just figured, okay, this is going to happen. At some point, Beverly is going to be gone. Other veterans will be gone. For Utah, this is fine. Hey, let's take a flyer. Let's see what he is. Let's develop him for the next couple of years. We're not going to be good. So if he sucks, that works out great for us. If he's pretty good, at least he's under contract for a couple of years and we got a potential building block or another piece we could spin off later to get something for. So I think that's just the kind of stuff. I, in general, am not very high on Taylor Horton Tucker. Gotten a good look at him up front, had that phenomenal preseason run, and hasn't really done much since. Like, it's hard to just kind of even say, what is he? Can't really shoot, doesn't really defend, gets to the rim, doesn't finish well because he's always trying to do an acrobatic finish with all of these things. Like, I look at him a lot and I go, like, what is he? Doesn't work for a team like the Lakers. For Utah, they have time now to go find out what he
is. He also might be the perfect high-volume replacement when they trade Donovan Mitchell to get you into that number one lotto spot. I mean, because he's, as of right now, he's not a good player. Like, he's fine. I think he's got some talent that might be there. But like you said, the lack of shooting, that it's glaring. He needs to have the ball in his hands to be effective.
On opening night. That's, yeah. I mean, he came to the league very young.
He's a baby still.
It's the money. I mean, let's be honest. It's the money. If he didn't make the money that he made, we would all probably be a little bit more patient.
It's not the money. It's not the money. It's the giving up of Caruso to get it. But also it's not just that. Yeah, but it's also not willing to include him in a trade to get Kyle Lowry the year before. Right? Like, there's a lot of...
I forgot about that. I forgot.
It's if you think about it this way, when you look at it in terms of the Lakers side... terrible asset management in this sense, right? Like, this guy could have gotten you a guy like Kyle Lowry. You weren't interested in that. You made the trade off of him over Caruso for financial decisions. And now you're getting Patrick Beverley, who's basically an older and probably worse Caruso. I mean, like, you're in it's just a really interesting scenario with what you're watching with that. And I just look at the Lakers again, going like, oh, that front office does it again.
Turn a dollar into 85 cents.
75 cents. Let's be honest now. It's not, they didn't get the dime out of that. They just got three quarters.
I think if you could run it back and ask him, would you rather have Pat Beverley or Alex Caruso, that Caruso would hands down be the guy that they'd rather have, especially at this point.
You wouldn't even have to worry about the Caruso Westbrook rift.
He's such a perfect connector too. And it's that's,
I mean,
a guy
the one
that
thing
that
you would say,
use.
And
I
this
mean,
this matter probably matter would matter more if they were actually good, is I think Beverly's a better shooter. Like, he's a better spot up shooter. I think at this point Caruso is a substantially better defender. But in terms of a guy playing off of LeBron, I do think Beverly, if somehow you okay, between LeBron, AD, and Beverly, there were, you know, someone better than Austin Reeves, who, you know, I think will do good things for them this year, but he's like their next best perimeter guy. Like, if they were two competent NBA wings, if there was Kyle Kuzma and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, perhaps, like, then all of a sudden that's a
Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and Alex. Poop. Yeah, I did say poop. Guys, it's summer. And Alex Caruso, in addition to LeBron, Anthony Davis, I mean, like, that's a pretty good team.
I mean, that's a team that won a title,
solid,
basically,
solid
with Danny Green instead
team.
Of KCP. So.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. And at this point, you know, especially because he's hurt, but KCP's an upgrade. Like, I don't know, man. If you were to go back through the moves since the bubble, I'd be hard pressed to find a really good one. But I do like this trade for the Lakers.
I think this was a good trade for the Lakers. I don't want to, I know we kind of just poo-pooed.
Yeah, we're just
a
making fun
bit,
of
him. Patrick,
we can Tavius
Patrick
Caldwell
Beverly,
poo-pooed him.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, now it's a forced joke. I like the move for Beverly. He's a good fit for them. LeBron and AD, he fits in need of what they need. You know, the hole that they need to fill. I'll push back a little bit. Not every move after the bubble, because I thought after the bubble, even though they kind of changed things around, if they went into that playoffs healthy, I think it's a whole different story. But the biggest one is the Westbrook trade. At the end of the day, that's just the move that we're all looking at going like, what the hell are you doing? Because it costs you so many pieces. And I think that's really the scenario with it. But after they won the championship, we can argue you should have run it back. I understood the line of thinking. If they were healthy that year, I think we're looking at it differently.
Yeah, the health stuff has been rough on them. I mean, both LeBron and Anthony Davis have kind of had issues staying on the court and being 100% when they were out there. So that's a good point, Mo. Very fair. And finally, guys, the Nets Kevin Durant saga is over. He's been, oh, no, wait. No. He's rescinded the trade request. They've worked it out. The Nets and the boardroom put out a joint statement saying that we're working it all out.
Continue our partnership.
Run this thing back. I'm assuming that means Kyrie. Well, at least it wasn't a contract divorce. You know, we don't have those in the NBA. But it does seem like all parties are going to try to make a go of it. And it means that this is the last time we have to talk about this stuff, right? How's Steve Nash going to handle this, guys? Like, I want to start there. How is Nash going to handle coming in to coach the... I mean, and from what I could gather, he and KD had a good relationship, at least up till they were working together. And I'm just curious, like, how does this work?
I think that's all overblown, if you want my honest opinion. I think when it comes to coaches, first off, they're used to this type of shit. Their job security gets questioned constantly. Every time, right? Like, okay, well, this is that. Like, this, it sucks. KD came out and said, I want, you know, both those guys got to go. Sean Marks and Steve Nash got to go for me to stay. And you know what? If you're Nash, you kind of, you know, Joe Tsai backing you, you kind of feel more like, well, fuck it, I'm the man now. You know, almost like that. That's not, that has not seemed to be his personality and how he handles things. I think he's very good with his high level of emotional IQ. I think he's solid with that stuff. But I think if you're Steve Nash, you just play it like you normally do. Just keep going about business. And I think we're losing sight sometimes of the we're going too far with like, oh, how's Steve Nash going to coach him? Same way he coached him last year. KD,
people have short memories. Like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mo, but like you've been around teams. There's blowups. They last. You know, we're angry at each other for 10 days, and then yeah, okay. And it's like hey, I, you know, basically all it takes is like, you know, Steve, how's it going? You know, I just said that because I was trying to, you know, move things along. No harm done. Yeah, just business.
It's business.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, cool. Let's go. Like, we, you know, they start 8-2. No one cares anymore.
Not even that. Like, let's even do this. Like, because we just go back to the Phil Jackson Kobe Bryant relationship. Right, they win 3 championships with Shaq. They lose to the Pistons. Jackson leaves, writes a book, blasts Kobe in this book. Like, literally blows Kobe up in this book. You would just think by that, every time the conversation then is like, well, that relationship's ended. That's done. Okay, fine. Phil Jackson comes back. They go to the 3 more finals, win 2 of them. Like, it's not a we look at it like these things are something you can't fix at all. I feel like player coach is easier to fix than player and grudges that are held there. Like, I think the Lakers will have a more difficult time mending the fences between Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverley that's been going on for 10 years. It was the 2013 playoffs, so maybe 9. My math's wrong. 9 years of that kind of beef that's been going, and they've been snipping back and forth at each other on Twitter and dumb little things like that versus something that KD said, what was it, like 3 weeks ago? Like, it's not even that big of a deal. Like, I feel like this easier for the Nets to fix this versus the Lakers having to fix the rift between Beverley and Westbrook if they don't trade Westbrook.
Can we talk about the Nets on the court? Because they made some changes, right? Like, I mean, how do you guys feel about this team? I mean, Ben Simmons being the big question mark on the court to me. Like, is he going to be healthy to play? I'm assuming Kyrie's going to play, you know, at least 50 games, 60 games. I mean, sure, but it's easier said than done. They have like one dance partner. Do we, I mean, you know, reunite Russ and KD? I don't think that's going to happen. So, what do you guys think they're going to do? Like, this is not a top 4 team in the East to me, right?
I think Boston and Milwaukee go into the season, you know, on a line above everyone else, depending on like Simmons' health and like what kind of state of Kyrie's approach to the game you get. And, you know, other like minor other things like TJ Warren's health, blah, blah, blah. If you wanted to put them in the mix with like a Philly and a Miami,
That's the battle for 3, 4, and 5. I think I have them there, but I have them rated a little bit lower. And part of that is because of how many games their guys are going to miss during the season.
This question determined it swings a little bit on. I was talking about this with Eric Name yesterday, I guess. And this swings a little bit on, you know, are we talking about where do we think they're finishing the standings or who's a bigger threat to go to the finals? And I think,
I mean, in the standings, right? Like, because now once they get to the playoffs, it's a different ballgame, but home court advantage is a factor. And I do think that the Nets in particular could use that kind of, but I don't know. I think Philly's going to be better. I expect Miami to be better.
Early afternoon road game.
I don't know if Miami's going to be that much better. Losing PJ Tucker haven't really filled the void at all in that sense. I don't know. Like we're hoping on a lot of things there and you know, maybe Tyler Hero actually plays defense or whatnot, but you know, there's
a lot of key players for Miami. And we said this going to the playoffs and he didn't like feature much like Caleb Martin. Yeah. Like
Caleb Martin.
Yeah, I don't.
They played Victor Oladipo over Caleb Martin in the playoffs.
But
it
just
drove
like,
me nuts.
You know, that size and athleticism on the wing with a little shooting. Like, you know, they were an old, slow team for the most part last year. And or depending on who's in the game, they were a young, slow team. But they were slow and like the guy who actually brings some pop. So,
yeah. Nothing worse than being a young, slow team, too. That hurts. But back to the Nets, I actually think they're a very interesting team. They have the most variance, I think. They can probably be up there as a top three, top four team in the East if they hit the ceiling, right? And you know, it can go either way. It can go complete disaster. They start out 2-8, and KD's going like, nope, get me out of here, trade the man back on. Kyrie going completely nuts, Ben Simmons disappearing, or Kyrie comes in going contract year. Nobody wanted me last year in a sign and trade. I really have to go out here and ball all season long and fool everybody into giving me that massive contract I want next year. And Ben Simmons coming out going like, I haven't played basketball for a year. I've heard all the whispers and everything out there. I need to go out there and show everybody why I was an all NBA player a couple years ago. And KD, you get in 70 games from KD and you're different scenario. That's that right there is something you're looking at. They get Joe Harris back, hopefully healthy. TJ Warren, if he can give him anything off the bench. Seth Curry, Patty Mills. They got some interesting pieces there. It's just such a variance where it's like, God damn, I can't predict any of this.
Well, and then the other big question mark is Joe Harris. Because if he's healthy, that's a whole different ballgame. I mean, they have a lot of shooting theoretically, especially with Joe Harris.
But it's also 6'7", 6'8", Joe Harris, like what, or 6'6", whatever size on the wing,
big.
Just having that, you know, Royce O'Neal having, that was their problem last year. When you, after the trade and you looked at the roster, it was all their wings were small. They were playing three guards and then KD and Nick Claxton.
It was like,
or KD and Bruce Brown.
I was like, going to say, Bruce Brown, please go guard this guy, the 6'9".
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think there's an element of like, I just, when people ask me what are the Nets going to be, I'm like, man, that team's going to be very high variance. And that's me using a Seth term. But like, that's a team I look at going like, man, I'll be very curious. I'm excited to watch them just because I want to see what the hell is going to happen.
Why I liked the trade for them when they made it is like, you start with a front court of KD and Ben Simmons. That's all of a sudden a very interesting defensive foundation. And if they can get to that with, you know, Simmons doing Ben Simmons things on offense, pushing the pace, being a connector who plays on the move instead of having it be a guy who stands on the perimeter and throws the ball into a post player and occasionally makes a cut in a very inventive offense. You see what there is, like the outline of something there. Just getting to that is so fraught.
Yeah. I mean, I think Claxton is also Claxton and Simmons is going to be interesting defensively.
I mean, a chance to be like a really interesting defensive front court. You know, I mean, like, again, it's just what are we going to get from Ben Simmons? It's really just the million dollar, billion dollar question. I don't know how much money he makes. it's a big question there that you're going to have to figure out. And I think that's the big piece for it.
Can these three guys all play 65 plus games? Like, that's the question. Can Kyrie, Ben Simmons, and Kevin Durant all play 65 or more games? And I think that's the question for the upcoming season. The more games they play, the better they're going to perform. But can they play 65 games?
Then, like, the total games they play is the games they play together. I think that, like, for a team with as sort of not perfectly more overlapping than fitting talent that the Nets have kind of happened to have over the couple of years, like having that, okay, if they played 60 games, each played 60 games, but they're all the same 60 games, I think that's better than them playing, 70 games, but only like 40 of them. Math. Yeah, that works. Only 40 of them together.
Yeah. I think the thing I would look at first is like Kyrie wasn't out because of injuries last year.
Right.
Right. Like, so there's that whole fiasco. Ben Simmons, the whole thing, hold out to the back stuff, but the year before, healthy. Right. It's really KD. Can KD stay healthy? And last year was the freak injury with, I think it was Bruce Brown falling into his knee. It's you're hopeful that these guys can stay healthy and stay out of that. If they're all healthy and they're all playing together and it's somewhat harmonious, this is a team that's at least top five in the East.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem. It's a lot of ifs, you gotta look at. But I could see it, right? Like, this is that variance thing.
You guys got anything else before we close the books on summer?
We're just waiting for one and a half more things, basically, which is, Donovan Mitchell and the disposition of Russell Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook. Like,
from a comedy standpoint, I'm hoping he starts the season on the Lakers just because that's going to be –
I will be there day one. Put in my media request for media day. Like, I want to see all of this.
I just want them to take team photos. That's it. Just team photos, and then he can be trained.
Isn't that a fun one?
I just need to see the team photos.
They square up to you.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Now act like you want to kill somebody.
That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thank you guys for listening to the Athletic NBA Show. From Mo DeKeel and Seth Partnow, I'm Dave DeFore, and this has been Nerder, She Wrote.